Taunton, darling, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
I'm very, very well. So good to see you, Stilton.
It's lovely to see you too, Bismuth.
I prefer dustbin.
Dustbin? No, my boy, how are you? It's been so long.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 187, Tony, Tony, Tony.
Anybody who has seen completely Hollywood abridged knows that my character is the actor, the diva. And there's a character trait for my character in that I can never really remember anybody's name. And so I call everybody by the name of Tony, because that's just what one does when you can't remember anybody's name. You call them Tony. There's a reason for this, and it goes back 20 years. Yes, in a previous life, I directed a production of Cyrano de Bergerac up at the American Stage Festival in New Hampshire, which is sadly no longer with us. And there was a young actor in that company by the name of Tom Shaw, who immediately, I think it was on the very first day of rehearsal, started calling everybody Tony. And why did you do that? You did it for a very specific reason, and why was it?
Some of the early roots of it were in a production of the Scottish play.
The Scottish play, yes. Whose name, because we are the Reduced Shakespeare Company, we will observe the traditions and not mention the name Macbeth. Continue.
Yes, yes. The Scottish play. A very infamous and now fairly largely forgotten production of the Scottish play with a Christopher Plummer and Glenda Jackson playing himself and herself.
Right. And who were you in this production? And it was, and it went through, well, two questions. This went through several directors, if memory serves. And then who were you in this production? It was a Broadway production, wasn't it?
Yes, it was a Broadway production. I played the first murderer and the whey-faced loon who delivers the news that Burnham Wood is moving towards Dunstanane.
Typecast again as the whey-faced loon.
Yes, indeed. And proud of it. This was in the annals of disaster, Broadway disasters, this actually looms. It has a place.
Does it really? I didn't know. I know about Moose Murders, of course, but I didn't know that this was high up there on that list.
Well, I mean, if you think of Shakespeare and Broadway disasters, this would land
right. Okay.
High. It was a very scaled down to production.
Okay.
And the initial concept was going to be that this was going to be one of the strengths of the production. So it would be the scaled down, very tiny cast.
It's all about the actors. It's all about the text.
Yes, yes, and these wonderful, brilliantly skilled Protean actors would be playing many, many roles.
Right.
There comes a point, though, where you've scaled down your Protean actors to such a small number that the production looks a little thin.
And who was the director?
This gets a little complicated.
Right.
The initial director was Ken Frankel.
Okay.
Who's a lovely man, who's no longer with us.
Yeah.
Lovely man.
He worked at the Huntington, I think, when I was there. Yeah.
Yes. And he was a long war for many years, apparently, as an artistic associate. I mean, he had quite a distinguished career. Did a number of Broadway plays. And he was the first director of record on this production. And the concept of the production was we were going to rehearse in New York and then go on. This doesn't happen anymore, but at the time this was sort of phasing out, but do a pre-Broadway tour where we would be on this road for 3 months.
Wow.
Honing the show to a finely honed production, and then bring it into New York triumphantly to perform on Broadway.
Well, and because it's a brand new script and God knows how it will play. Right.
Yes. Well, there was a lot of rewriting being done, of course, at the time, because the playwright traveled with us. But
but not really. I mean, doesn't that seem sort of silly to spend 3 months honing the production of a text that's been around for almost 400 years?
Yes. Well, this was what used to be done, though. It was the out of town tryout, right?
Right. I see. So it wasn't. We're not honing the script. We're honing the performances and the production.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Right. Got it.
So, and it was also a way to sort of reap the proceeds of, you know, performing in Boston and Toronto and
help that pay for New York.
Right, yes, right, right.
So, right,
anyway, first day of rehearsal.
Uh-huh.
I arrived a little bit early, and I was working as the fight captain on the shows. Right. So there was another fight director, and I was there to sort of help the actors learn the choreography and things like that. So I'd come a little bit early to meet with, to spend a little bit of time with the director and talk about some things and things like that.
And what is the, so there's a fight choreographer who choreographs the fights, but the fight captain sort of maintains the fights after the choreographer has left, right?
Yes, yes. And in this instance, too, because the fight director was in and out, the fight captain was there to kind of rehearse the actors as well. So, in the rehearsal. Anyway, all this is beside the point. I was there a little bit early and had come to the rehearsal room, and I was very excited because this is my first Broadway show.
Oh, was it? That I didn't know.
It was incredibly thrilling to be in something like this, of course. And
with Christopher Plummer and Glenda Jackson.
I know. How exciting is that?
Yeah.
So I walked over to where the coffee machine was, and there was this production assistant in sort of a slouchy sweatshirt and blue jeans with this lanky hair hanging over her face. And I walked over to get a cup of coffee. And as I pulled the cup and started to fill it from the coffee machine, I sort of turned to her and said, I think this might be very exciting. And she turned to me and said, yes, I think it might be thrilling. And it was Glenda Jackson.
Oh, not the intern, but herself.
Yes, she was kind of wonderful in that I've heard your podcast before, and you talk about the protean actor, what this business is about. It's really, in many ways, not about, you know, sort of the glamour aspect of things, but people coming to work and doing a good day's work.
Doing the work, yeah.
And she was one of those.
Wow.
She was really extraordinarily hardworking and down to earth.
Wow. And this is before, of course, she left the business to be the MP for Hempstead.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
And
right.
She did, however, have a very low tolerance for idiocy.
I'm surprised you lasted more than an hour.
Yes, I know. It's extraordinary, isn't it? Anyway, our first performances were in Stamford, Connecticut. We arrived at the show at Stamford, set up the sets, did our tech, did our first performance, and then to my recollection, I don't know whether this is to my recollection, right. The next day there was a company meeting where we were told that the director had been fired.
Oh dear.
And Robin Phillips then became the director of the show.
Okay.
So from that point, this is where the madness began. From that point, we rehearsed, we performed at night the Ken Frankel production, and during the day we rehearsed the Robin Phillips production.
Oh my God! Talk about schizophrenia. How were you able to keep that straight?
Not well.
Not easily.
It was all set related because you would be on the set in the evening, and you would in those costumes you would remember what it was you were supposed to do, and then during the day you were rehearsing the Robin Phillips production. So they let Ken Frankel go.
But it's not just you, the protean actors. It's also your stars, Glenda Jackson and Ms. Christopher Plummer.
Oh, my God, yes. Yes, yeah. It's a whole new production. So Robin Phillips, who used to be the artistic director of Stratford in Canada, came on as the director. And the Robin Phillips production was very dynamic. A lot of running around, a lot of torches, a lot of skin. It was very sort of, you know, very, very visceral and bloody. And
very 80s.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this new production, Robin Phillips actually had a sort of a brilliant idea, which was the murder of... He one day in rehearsal said, you know, this is one of the first Shakespeare plays that was performed indoors at the Blackfriars.
Okay. I did not know that.
But I don't know whether it's true or not, but it's what he said.
All right, fair enough.
So he actually made a very sort of incisive observation that this was one of the first performances where you could control things like lighting. You could control the environment in a way you could never do it when you were doing it outdoors.
Right.
And he had this thought that the murder of Banquo, which is followed by this banquet scene in which the ghost shows up, the murder of Banquo takes place. There's a lot of reference to light and dark in the show, night and day. And the murder of Banquo takes place at night. It's sort of there are references to a torch and it's going to rain tomorrow and things like that in the play. They give you the sense that it takes place at night. So his wonderful, incisive idea was that when the murder of Banquo, me being the first murderer, of course, being very involved in this, the murder of Banquo happened, that it happened at night. And at some point, one of the murderers says to the other, who did strike out the torch? So taking this as a clue, he thought, this murder, you see it start to happen. The torch goes out. You don't see the rest of the murder. You just hear it.
Oh, interesting. That's very cool, actually.
Which, just in a room full of, think of the audiences coming to see this, all of who are carrying sidearms and swords and things like that. Yeah. Suddenly you're hearing this murder happening in the dark, and you don't know what's happening around you.
Right.
It's kind of a great thing. And then light comes on, and you're in a banquet with lots of people, lots of light, color, everything like that. So it's sort of a striking transition. So whose idea was brilliant. We'll do the murder in the dark. It'll go dark. And then the lights will come up. You'll hear the end of the murder. The lights will come up. It will be the banquet scene. So this was one of his sort of coup de théâtre when we came to Toronto. So we rehearsed it. We rehearsed the murder. We rehearsed the whole thing. Moving to Toronto, he spent... we had a very, very quick turnaround. And this new production, Robin Phillips' production, had a new set, new costumes, everything. It was a new production.
Oh, my God.
This was the Weisslers wanted to save some money, and it ended up being two completely different productions.
Right, right.
And we... rehearsed. We had a very, very short time to tech the show before our performance in Toronto. I seem to recall, we're looking back a few years, it was like a two-day turnaround. It was insane the amount of time. And
well, and at some point you had to stop doing the production at night to tech the new production that was going to go into night. You couldn't, just can't turn that around in an afternoon.
Yes, moving from Pittsburgh to Toronto. We dumped the old set and they installed the new set in Toronto. Right. And we arrived in Toronto, it was new set, new production.
Right.
That was like the line of demarcation.
Right.
So, the day of the opening in Toronto, there was a rehearsal called in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And Robin Phillips, one of the things that he did in the rehearsal was restage the murder.
Yeah.
Christopher Plummer was not at rehearsal that day. He had a bad tennis knee, which was starting to really be aggravated.
Right.
And he had a disintegrating disc in his neck. So he was in a degree of discomfort, and he would go for physical therapy, and he would rest and things like that during the day. So he wasn't around a lot. And when he would show up, he would show up in a wheelchair with a cervical collar on, rolling.
Oh, my God!
Saying, hello, darlings, hello, and lever himself up out of his wheelchair to rehearse.
So was Christopher Plummer a real diva or a real lovey, or he just had so many other things going on?
It's complicated.
Yeah.
It's complicated.
Right.
In some ways, he was an old-style man of the theater.
Right.
And still, I'm sure, is.
Yeah.
But, and this is where we will eventually get to the darling, Tony. because he did have a bit of the darling, sweetheart.
He would greet you with a darling, sweetheart, because he wasn't exactly sure of who you were.
Amen to that, yes.
Right.
Yes, I think so, yes. 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 There was a certain amount of sort of a slightly grand quality to him, which, I mean, God knows he's earned.
Yeah, and he's met a few people in his day.
He's met a few people in his day, and God knows the first murderer is not someone who's... Oh, What's his name? His name is Tom. I have to remember that.
But if memory serves, he has a... If I know where you're going in this story, he has an unexpected introduction to the first murderer, doesn't he?
Oh, God.
This is Michael Butler, Artistic Director of Center Repertory Company in Walnut Creek, California, and you are listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you see the RSC? We're starting our final week of Completely Hollywood Abridged here at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C., and we've posted our fall 2010 tour dates to our website. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for specific venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with actor and fight director Tom Shaw, two aging divas sitting in a noisy restaurant. Tom continues his story of his Broadway debut in the ill-fated production of the Scottish play Is There Any Other Kind? And the new blocking rehearsal that star Christopher Plummer missed.
So, we rehearsed it. We've changed the blocking.
Right.
Christopher Plummer isn't at that rehearsal because he's resting for that night's performance.
Yeah.
We get to the performance. So, as the first murderer, now we jump to first person.
We go out, we do the murder of Banquo, and the light is struck out for who did strike out the light, and it is pitch black on the stage.
Yeah.
It is dark.
Right.
And we're performing at the O'Keefe Center, which is huge. You almost need to take a bus to get from the wings to the stage. It's huge. And my blocking at that point is to exit through portal number one, And I used to, in the old production, exit through portal number one, pick up the candelabra, turn, bring it on stage, place it, turn, and exit again.
Right.
New production, I exit in portal number one and keep going.
All right.
And a technician at that point brings on the candelabra. Well, what I didn't know at the time, and nobody knew, because it's one of those things that sort of happens, is Christopher Plummer used to exit, grab the candelabra, turn to go back on stage. He would follow me on stage because he starts right next to the candelabra. The blackout happens. I start making my exit. There's a lot of ground to cover.
Right.
I'm moving. I'm not running, but I'm moving with great alacrity to get off the stage by the time the lights come off.
Right.
What I don't know at the time is Christopher Plummer is standing off stage, waiting for his entrance. Suddenly, a technician picks up the candelabra and starts to go on stage.
Right.
And it's something he's never seen before. And he follows with a degree of alacrity. And I smack into him in the dark and knock out his front tooth.
Boom! Boom! Wow.
Yes, yes. I hit someone in the dark. I don't know who it is at that point. I feel something give.
Oh.
And I hear an ouch. And I think, I've just broken Christopher Plummer's nose.
Oh, no.
In the dark. I continue my exit because God, I don't know what else to do.
Still got to get off stage.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
The lights come up. I turn to watch, and he starts the scene, and there's no blood pouring out of his face, and I think, maybe that was someone else.
Maybe, yeah, right, maybe. Well, it wasn't him, all right. We dodged a bullet.
We dodged a bullet. It was somebody who I won't cost my job to be. My cue comes, and I enter the stage in my servile murderer way, and he sees me and comes over to me and says, there's blood on thy face. And I look at him, and he has no front tooth.
And he's lisping.
And I realize I already gave the punchline away. I've knocked out his front tooth.
Oh, my gosh.
And I continue with the scene. And at the end of the scene, I go off stage and think, okay, if I go to the dressing room now and get out of my costume, by the time intermission happens, I can be out of the building. By the time they figure out where I am, I could be at the hotel packing. By the time I figure out I'm at the hotel, I could be at the airport. But I figure I have to face this. So at intermission, I come out and...
And you went up to him in his dressing room?
There's a curtain drop at the end of the act, which happens at the end of the scene. And I go out on stage and go to him and say, are you all right? And he's sitting there in his last scene position with his hand open, with his tooth in his hand. And I say, are you all right? And he says, some asshole ran into me in the dark.
Oh.
I said, oh, that asshole was me.
And that's how I continue to think of you to this day.
Yes. So that's the low. That's I think I've, as close as I've ever come to leaving this business.
But I bet he knew your name then, right?
Asshole.
Really? Yeah. Oh yeah, right, Mr. Asshole.
No, actually, he was staggeringly gracious about it.
Right.
I said, there was a blocking change.
Yeah.
Didn't you get it? And he went and chewed out the stage manager.
For not telling him, as he should have done.
Well, yeah, and in the stage manager's defense, this was a whole... He was trying to mount... He hadn't slept in, like, 36 hours.
I'm
he
sure.
was mounting a whole new production in no time. So,
right.
But it's something that just fell through the cracks.
Oh,
and,
God.
You know, this is what happened.
Well, so then we do this production of Cyrano, or Cyrano, as we took to calling it, because we all started that summer, being grand actors. I mean, even more grand than we normally are. You started calling me all sorts of things.
There's variations on Austin.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Dunstan. Bismuth. Yes, young Princeton.
Princeton.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh, that was fun.
Dustbin was my favorite, and I remember, and Bjorn became Bijou, darling. and Dennis, who was at the time, Dennis Parlato played Cyrano, was soap opera boy. You know, he was playing a leading villain in the soap opera One Life to Live. So he was quite kind of, well, famous at that time for being this bad guy on the soap. And so it was always, oh, I'm sorry, Soap Boy. What is your Durwood? That's what it is, Durwood. Would you, if you would? And I remember you called me Tony once, in a completely appropriate manner. You actually, I was staging the curtain call. And as you do in a curtain call, you know, you bring out the ensemble first, and then they bow first, and then you bring out this really tiny roles, and they get their bow, and then the next major roles, they get their bow, and you work your way up to the lead, to Cyrano. And you were playing De Guiche in this production, Cyrano's rival for the affections of Roxanne, the Comte de Guiche. And I called you out, and I said, Tony, and I'd like you to come out now, dear boy, from stage right, would you? And you came out on stage and you said, are you sure, darling? Check your list. And I went, what? And I looked at my list and I went, oh, crap, you're absolutely right. You know, you're not next. No, sorry. But do you have fond memories, ultimately, of that production?
You know, it was, I have to say, my memories, there's so many great stories that sort of center around Christopher Plummer. Is sort of his darling, slightly the grand manner, and I remember him rolling into rehearsal in his wheelchair and his cervical collar and going, come on, darlings, let's go, and the sword fight at the end. At that point, his neck killed him so much that the sword fight was this sort of flipping the sword back and forth but not really being able to but he, and this is the thing about these actors of the old school, despite the darling and the limo to and from the theater, he put that show on every night, and was he and she weren't particularly brilliant together, but his soliloquies were, I still remember them and think, wow, that was pretty extraordinary.
Wow.
And despite a knee that was killing him and a neck that was killing him, everything like that, he went out there and he played the shit out of that show. And to this day, I have like this sort of bifurcated view of him. And part of him is like, oh my God, all these stories I can tell about him. And then the other side of him, the other view I have of him that I possess simultaneously is him just being extraordinarily moving on stage.
Wow.
Yeah. You know?
And it's all worth it. And now, Christopher Plummer and his inability to remember any actress name has now been immortalized and completely Hollywood abridged.
Oh, man. I'm waiting for his lawyers to call. Do you think he listens?
I'm sure that he does.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your affected nicknames via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can interact with other fans at our website, reducedshakespeare.com, and our Reduced Shakespeare Company fan page at facebook.com. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, Thane of Cawdor, Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout out this week goes to Scats 155. No reason, it's just random. Thanks very much to Tom Shaw and to Michael Butler, artistic director from Center Rep Theater Company in Walnut Creek, California, who was also, we just found out, in this same production of the Scottish play starring Glenda Jackson and Christopher Plummer that you have just heard about. Next time we're in Walnut Creek, we will have to get his stories. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 187 561sts of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Tony, thank you so much for talking to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Oh, my dear, it was a pleasure. Dustin Princeton, San Antonio, something like that.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.